Okay, so we are holding by the first Mishnah on Nun Beis Amud Beis. We learned so far about how Skila is accomplished and how Srefa is accomplished. Now this Mishnah is going to deal with how Herek is accomplished. And the one after that with Chenek. And then after that, the rest of the Perek is going to deal with the various people who get Skila. So the Mishnah starts off, Mitzvah Sanarog, in the Mitzvah of how to do Herek, they would chop off his head with a sword, the way that the government, the way that the Goyish governments of those days did, when a person was liable to execution. Rabbi Huga,
who used to do that?
The Goyish governments of that time, the Greeks, the Romans, whatever, used to, their standard method of executing somebody was beheading. Well, maybe not their standard one, but whatever, one of the ways that they, so the same way is done by Beis Din. Rabbi Huda, I'm a nivul huloi. Rabbi Huda says that is a disgrace to him. Elamanichen esroisha ala sabyan. Rather, what you do is, now, on the face of it, we would assume that nivul who's there, Rashi says, the implicate, presumably, Rabbi Huda's problem with it is the guy's standing, and then he falls, his head falls in one direction, his body in another, and that would be disgraceful. We'll see in the Gemara that Rabbi Huda has a different meaning of the word nivul. Instead, Elaman Nichenes Reisha Ala Sadan. So no, Rabbi Huda says what you do is you put his head on a block, like a block of wood or something, the kofit, and then you chop off his head using a kofit, which is a meat cleaver, or a large knife. Amrulai, the Chacham answered him, ain't misa menuvelas mizu. There's no misa that's more menuvel than that. On the contrary, you're trying to make it less menuvel. This is even worse.
Don't chopping his head like
yeah, like this. So the Yad Ramah brings two possible hellas. The Yad Ramah brings two possibilities. One is, which he doesn't like this explanation, he says maybe what the Chachamim are saying is it's more of a nivel to him that you're killing him like an animal. You're putting his head down there on the block and chopping. The problem with that, that Yad Ramah says, he wouldn't call that nivel. Nivel is a word that means more like gruesome or something. The word for that would be, the word it's gruesome either way the guy's dead. But the point is, that wouldn't be called nivel, that would be called bizoyim. That would be called that you're treating him like less than a human being. No, the Yad Ramah says the reason why we in Misim and Avelos Mizu is because a kleifet, the meat cleaver, doesn't have as sharp or as narrow a blade as a sword does. So therefore, what's going to happen is not only you're chopping the guy's head, but also you're causing bruising or injury or whatever to his neck more than is necessary to kill him. And therefore, they're arguing better to use a sword. So the Gemara starts off, Tanya, Omalahen Rabbi Huda l'chachamim, so Rabbi Huda says to the chachamim, Afani yadeh shemisim menuvelasi. Fine, I'm also aware that killing him with a kofit would be a menuvelik way of doing it. Avo ma'ese, but what can I do? Shari oma Torah v'chukaseim lo'yselechu. Because the Torah tells us, don't follow in the ways of the goyim. If this is the way that the goyim execute people, we can't do that. Therefore, of necessity, we're going to have to use a kofit. V'rabbanan, what are the Rabbanan answer to that? They say, kiven d'chsiv sayif b'raisa. Yes, but since the Torah tells us, as we're going to learn in a few lines, that is a concept of killing somebody with sayif, is a concept of killing somebody by beheading, lo minayo kogamrin. And we're not learning from the way the goyim are doing it.
They're using the sayif also.
They're using it also. But first, so the Ran explains, and then various other Rishonim talk about various nuances in this. You have two things over here. Number one, it's said in the Torah. Number two, Chukas HaGoyim, we're going to see soon what the limit for it is. But number one, you have the concept in the Torah. Number two, though, when do we say that something becomes also as Chukas HaGoyim, even if it's mentioned in the Torah? For example, we had a couple of parashiyos ago, right, the Obis put up Matzevas, and that was fine, but afterwards the Matzeva became hateful to the Ebishter because the Goyim started doing it. The difference is, when you have something that the Goyim are doing, having something to do with Avodah Zarah, or having something to do with Yuhara, like pride or whatever, then it's an inappropriate thing for us to do, even if it says in the Torah. Here, what we have is it says in the Torah, and it has nothing to do, they're not doing it on the face of it, mitzvah of a desorah or mitzvah pride or anything like that. It's just, they're just doing it. That's the way they came up to execute somebody. So therefore, those two things taken together makes it not considered chukas hagoyim. With that said, I mean, the Shevet HaLevi, for example, wants to say that actually the fact that we're saying Kedev Shal Malchus, like they're doing it to show, it is kind of a thing of pride. It is kind of like they're showing, like, we're the ones in charge, and therefore we can execute people. And therefore, in that sense, only the fact that it says in the Torah saves us from that. The Eloi Temahochi and the Rabbanan continue. After all, if you're not going to say like that, if you're going to say that anything the Goyim do, we're not allowed to do at all. Hod Tanya, what about this that we learn in a Braisa? so phenomenal, Malachim. You're allowed to, after a king dies, you burn their bed and their other personal effects. This is not considered darchei hamori. This is not considered a superstitious goyish kind of thing. Now, on the face of it, you would have to ask, and how should we be allowed to burn them? Well, the Torah says not to follow in the ways of the goyim, and we see the goyim do that kind of thing by their king's funeral. So that's the answer. No, but since it says this concept of burning the king's personal effects, it says to the thing in a pasuk. Araisa usually means the Torah, means Chamishah Chomshay Torah, but here it's a pasuk from Nevi'im. Dichtiv, namely the pasuk says that the Yirmiyahu tells, we learned about this the other day when we were talking about in the whole sugya of burial and hesped and whatever, whether it's covered for the living or for the dead, the pasuk that Yirmiyahu says to Tzidkiyahu, the last king of Yehuda, even though you're going to be taken into galus, eventually you will be buried in an honorable way. They'll do a burning for you like they did for your ancestors, the previous kings of Yehuda. So since it mentions that concept in a pasuk, lav minayu kogamrinin, then it means we're not learning it from them. It's an independent thing that we have. So therefore, by the same logic, in other words, therefore, v'hochanami, so the same logic over here, kivin nechtiv sayif baraisa, since the Torah tells us there is a concept of killing somebody with sayif, lav minayu kogamrinin, and then we're not learning from the way the goyim do it, and therefore, even if they're doing it the same way, it doesn't matter. So Tosfos brings up a point also about that if it's a matter of the shema avodas kachavim, if it has something to do with avodah zara, then the fact that it says it, then that still we would say the fact that the goyim are doing it would make it also, were it not for the fact that it said in the Torah. If it's something that they do for avodah zara, for example, matzeva, it doesn't matter whether it says in the Torah or not.
Right.
Yes, that's the point, in other words. But here, the surfing has nothing to do with Avodah Zarah. They don't only do it by a king who they deify, who they consider a god. They do it by any king. It has nothing to do with Avodah Zarah. And since it also says an apostate, then therefore it's mutter. So the same thing as far as executing by beheading somebody with a sword rather than, like Rabbi Yehuda says, with a koyfet, with a meat cleaver. Okay. So now we have to figure out, how do we taka see? Where does the Torah taka tell us about this concept of herig? So, v'hozitznan v'idach pirkin. Now we're going to learn in another perek of our Masechta, after our perek, we're going to have our perek and the next perek deal with the various people who get skila, beginning with the Mishnah Nun Gimel, from there until the rest of the perek is the people who get skila. The next perek after that, most of it is about the Ben Sora Ramora, who also gets skila. After that, you have a perek about the Nisrofin. Then you have a perek that includes then you have a perek that has the Nisrofin and the Neharogin, because there's only two Neharogin that we deal with them quickly. Then we go on to the Nechnokin. So later on, in a later perek, we learn Elohein HaNeharogin, the following people get herek, Haritzeach Ba'anshe Eir Nidachas, a murderer and people of Eir Nidachas. So we have to figure, where do we know that these two people get hereg, and more to the point for our Gemara, where do we see that the punishment is dafka to chop off their head? So, Vishleima Eir Nidachas, I can understand by the Eir Nidachas that we know it has to be that way. It says that they should be killed by the edge of the sword, so that means, therefore, yeah, that's hereg. El Ritzeach Menol, and how do we b'chlal know that a Ritzeach is chayev misa by hereg? The Tanya, we learn in a Braisa like this. The Pasuk says that if a person killed his Eved Ivri, if a person hits his Eved Ivri, Eved Ivri for sure, there's no question, Eved Knani, rather, a person hits his Eved Knani or Shikha Knanis, and they die within 24 hours, the Pasuk says, Nokoy mi Nokoy, they shall be avenged. Nekima Zueni Adem Mahu. What does it mean, they're avenged? When you have in the Tosafot in Bechukosai, when the Pasuk says, "I will bring against you a sword that takes vengeance that avenges the vengeance of the bris," meaning the fact that the Jewish people violated the bris they made with the Edishta, heavy armor, nekima zusayif. So now we know the word nekima means a sword. Exactly. So therefore we see that nokim yinokim means that he has to be executed by the sword.
Does that mean Hashem literally that the goyim are going to punish them with sword?
Yeah, it can mean, that the goyim are going to come against them with swords and that'll execute judgment against them. Yeah. What about him? He's dead. So therefore his master now is executed for his execution, assuming of course there was Aiden Basra, the usual. Then
and the Mizid and everything.
That's the Mizid we're talking about, yeah, if there was Aiden Basra, yeah. Okay. So the question is, Aimer Deboris le Mivraz, who says, though, that it means to, who says that it means in either of these cases, the Retzeach or the Iyanu Dachas, who says it means to chop off their head? Maybe it means to stab them with a sword. The answer is, Lefi Cheref, yes, but the Pasuk says that they should be killed with the edge of the sword. Now, Rashi points out, we find in some places, we find, for example, it says by the Anshei Anidachas. No, by the Anshei Anidachas, it said the word Lefi Cheref.
Right.
We're saying that, now, we have to say that whatever is done to the people of the Anidachas must be the exact same thing that is done to the Retzeach, because otherwise, as we're going to learn later on in the Gemara, we have a Halacha L'Moshe Messina, there are only four Mrs. Basedim. If you're going to say that the Anshei Anidachas are killed by having their head chopped off, whereas the Retzeach is killed by being stabbed, then you have five different kinds of mitzvahs: skila, strefa, two types of hereg, and chenek, and we know there's only four.
The same use of the
cherev must be for both. Now, by the Irani Dachas, it says lefi cherev, and so Rashi explains the point of it is like this. Lefi cherev implies you're talking about, lefi meaning the mouth, literally, of the sword. Now, we find in Tillim, we say every day in Pesukah de Zimra, the cherev pifios biyadam. They have a sword of pifios, of two mouths. Now, what does that mean? A sword doesn't have two points. A sword has one point. What it means is two edges. In other words, a double-edged sword. Well, therefore, automatically, that means pi-cherev can't possibly mean the point of the sword. It has to mean the edge of the sword. And how do you kill somebody with the edge of the sword? Is by beheading them.
Well, you could say also there's, before the point, there's two edges.
But nevertheless, though, the point is that obviously there has to be a way of killing him with one edge versus. If you're going to stick the sword into him, if you're going to stab him, then he's being killed with more than one edge. Yeah, the Yad Ramah says something a little bit along those lines. Also, the implication is there has to be a way of killing him with only one edge, and if you stab him, then necessarily you're killing him with both edges. Yeah. Okay. So the Ficheref Ksiv, so therefore it has to be with one edge. Okay, the Ema de'ovid le'gistra, fine, maybe it means you take the sword and chop him in half. Omer Rav Nachman, Omer Rav Bavur, Omer Pro, the famous thing that we've had a few times already, v'ahavta l'recha kamecha, bror le'misayotah. The Pasuk says, v'ahavta l'recha kamecha, you have to choose for him the nicest, the easiest, whatever possible death. If you have a choice between understanding that hereg means chopping off his head, which is an easier way, versus chopping him in half, which is harsher on him, then you've got to do the first one.
It's still,
the guy's still going to be dead at the end, but it's still easier than being chopped in half.
No.
We're talking about, obviously, they had somebody who knows what he's doing. Okay. The question is, Ashkechon Dekata, I'm going to say you could say the same thing if they chop him in half. Same thing if they take more than one time.
Well, that's sure.
Yeah, okay. Okay, so the question is, Ashkechon Dekata after. Fine. We see that a person is high of hereg and has his head cut off if he kills an Evan. Knabi. Bachorin Menolon. How do we know the same thing would apply if he kills a Yisrael ben Chorin? He says, well, I've Kavachomo. Fine. Can't you make a Kavachomo? Kotel after Basayef. After all, you're going to say that if he killed an Eved, he gets Sayef, Bachorin, Bechenek. Are you going to think that maybe if he kills a Bachorin, he only gets Chenek? Now, the obvious question is, which many Mephoshim talk about, what happened to Ein Onshin Min Adin? What happened that you're not allowed to punish somebody based on a Kavachomo? The answer is, that applies. When you have, you wouldn't even know that there's a particular that there's any kind of punishment were it not for the Kavach Chomer. For example, we talked the other day about a man and his daughter. We wouldn't know. The Torah never spells out that a man is also to have relations with his daughter, but we can't learn it from a Gzeira Shav. We can't learn it from a Kavach Chomer. The Torah says you're also to have relations with your granddaughter, how much more so your daughter, because ain't ancient idea. But once the Torah establishes that, you chayav misa for Ritzicha, which the Torah tells us in a number of places, most notably at the end of Parshas Maaseh, there's many psukim on the subject. Then we can use a Kavach Chomer to establish what type of mitzvah it would be. Okay. Question is, okay, that works according to the Chachamim. That Chenek is the more lenient method of execution more than Sayyid. Fine, then you can say it's not logical that you should get a lesser punishment for killing a Ben Chorin than an Eved, so they have to be the same. El Lamando Amma Chenek Chomer, but according to Reb Shimon, who said that Chenek is more severe than Sayyid, Mayik Lamema, what would he say? Maybe according to him, you would think to say that if you kill an Eved, Sayyid of Hereg, which is another word for the same thing. Sayyid means the sword.
So you just said he said that
Chenek is more stringent than Hereg. So maybe we would say, according to Reb Shimon, how do we know, according to Reb Shimon, that's not the case? We don't say that you kill an Eved, you get the most lenient punishment, which is Hereg, according to him. But if you kill a Ben Chorin, you go one level up and you get Chenek. How do we know that not? The answer is Nakula Imitanya. He learns it on the basis of the following braisa. The Pasuk says by the Egla Rufa, the Ata Tavar Dam Hadom Hanoki Mikubacha. The Pasuk says, the last Pasuk of Parsha Shoftim, that you should remove the guilt of the innocent blood from within you, meaning that you do the Egla Rufa, and then if you find the murderer afterwards, then you execute him. Meaning Hukshu called Shoftim Egla Rufa. Meaning we're making a hekish between a murderer and the Egla Rufa. Malahal and Basayif Minasavar, just like the Egla Rufa, you use a sword or a cleaver or something and you chop off its neck. Afkan Basayif Minasavar, the same thing by Ritzayach, it has to be that you use a sword and you do it from his neck.
Because of this pasuk.
Because of the pasuk, because of the hekesh between Va'ata Tavar Hadom Anoki Mikribacha, that we're comparing killing the Egla Rufa, the pasuk is comparing killing the Egla Rufa to killing the Ritzayach. So therefore, just like the Egla Rufa has his head chopped off, so does that. Question is, Malahal and Bekofitz and Mamul Oref. Fine, but if you're going to say that Hekish, then you should say, just like over there by the Egla Rufa, first of all, they use a Kofitz, they use a meat cleaver, not a sword. And second of all, the Mamul Oref. Second of all, they do it from the back of the neck. They don't do, like Shchita is done from the front of the neck. You have the animal's head is like this, and you shecht. You shecht, I'd say going upwards, but in reality you lay down the animal, so it's sideways, but whatever, you do from the front of the neck, so you cut the simonim first. Mates by the Egla Rufa, you don't do that. The Egla Rufa is you take a cleaver and you chop from the back. In that case, Afkan Bekofitzum and Mol Oref, maybe you should say by Hereg also, that it means you take the cleaver and chop from the back of his neck, if you make that hekesh, yeah? Again, Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rav Avo, Amar Pravi, Haftu Lech Kamecha, Bror Le Misa Yotze. Again, fine, the Hekesh tells us you need to chop off the head. It doesn't tell us how the chopping off the head should be, accomplished, and therefore, if it can be accomplished in a way that's a little easier on the guy, namely, you cut the simonim first, and therefore he's immediately dead, rather than you have to go through the neck vertebrae and the spinal cord first, which makes him take a little longer for him to die, then you should do the first way. So that's how you do it. Mind you, according to Rabbi Yehuda, so you do it in the front. According to Rabbi Yehuda in the Mishnah, not necessarily. Since according to Rabbi Yehuda in the Mishnah, you're laying his head down on the block and chopping, then according to Rabbi Yehuda, maybe Taka.
On the neck.
Well, so maybe Taka, according to Rabbi Yehuda, you're doing it from the back, like a guillotine or something. But yeah, according to the Chachamim, this is how we do it.
But if it's from the back, you have the aspect that he doesn't know what's coming. It's more.
He knows what's coming either way. He knows what's coming either way.
He doesn't
see it. Okay, so fine. So he closes his eyes. Okay. Mishnah says, Mitzvah Sanechnokin, the mitzvah of how they did Chenek, Hoyu Meshakinos of the Zevel Adokabos, so they would sink him down in dung and animal waste until his knees, as we learned before by Srepa, and for the same reasons, according to Rashi, so he doesn't move around, and according to the Yad Rama, in case he loses control of his bowels. The Noisim Suda Koshal Secharaka, you put a hard scarf into a soft one, same as we did by Srepa. The Korachal Tavori, you put it around his neck. One pulls in one direction, the other in the other direction. Now, by Srefa, we did that in order to force his mouth to open, until the neshama leaves him. And, that's how Chenek is accomplished. You strangle him that way, by the two people pulling on the two ends.
What do we do? We have to put a hard one and a soft one.
Same idea, so you don't wound the body. Same idea, so you're not wounding him in the course of killing him. And on the other hand, as we'll see in the Gemara, Chenek is supposed to be like Srefa in that sense, where there's no external mark on the body. And on the other hand, you can't only use a soft one because it'll rip.
There shouldn't be any marks on the body.
Yeah, as much as possible. The drip went. No, now we're talking about Chenek. We learn it a price. So the Gemara is not really going to discuss the details of how we do chenek because it's pretty straightforward. What we're going to discuss in the Gemara is where b'chlau we find a skila we find mentioned in the Torah, sreifa we find mentioned in the Torah, hereg. Okay, we had just now the limud of how we have at least the word lefi cherev when it comes to the ir nidah. Chenek. There's no place where the Torah actually says in so many words do chenek. So we have to figure out where do we b'chlau know that form of mitzvah from. So, Tanan Abonim, we learn it in Pelaita. Now, the Pasuk says, the Pasuk says as follows in Parashas Kedoshim, if a man is mizaneh with an eshes, he's mizaneh with his friend's wife, and the noyaf and the neyafes shall be put to death. So what are some of the words in this Pasuk seem to be extra? So, ish, when it says, ish asher yinachas eshes ish. What does the word ish mean? It means prat lakotan. It means as opposed to a cousin. If a cousin is mizana with a married woman, now the question is, you have a note over here on the side that
know that already.
After you have a note on the side, don't we know that a cousin is always potter from my chin? So there's a couple of different explanations. One of them is the Raivad, the Smag say that what the Mishnah wants to distinguish between. We know the chatan is going to be potter in either case, but the Mishnah wants to distinguish between whether the chatan is below 9 years old or above 9 years old. Below nine, his bia is not even considered a bia. So not only he's not executed because he's a chatan, neither is she because there was no bia. Nothing that's considered bia in halacha. As opposed to, if he's over nine, yeah, he's potter either way, but she would be chayav misa if she was willing. He's potter because he's underage. She's chayav because she was willing. Assuming she was willing, that is. That's one. Then on the note over here on the side, it says that Tosfos elsewhere talks about a different reason. Later on, in a few blocks, when we get to the whole concept that one of the people who's chayav skila, among the various people who are chayav skila, are people who commit bestiality, people who have relations with animals, we're going to talk over there about the whole concept of takala and culling. You have that the animal is killed. Why? Either because a yid came about to do an aveda through it, or because of the embarrassment that you don't want the forever after people are going to say, hey, that's the animal that Pliny did it with. So we're going to discuss over there in that connection. The Gemara discusses over there the issue: what happens if a cotton is mizana with an animal? Is the animal executed or not? And based on the discussion in the Gemara over there, it may come out that in principle, maybe both the cotton and the animal should be executed. Elamai, the kid is a cotton. Elamai, the kid is a cotton. No, we're talking about above nine. We're talking above nine or above three for above nine or above three for a girl. The Gemara discusses over there. It comes out. It's not in so many words in the Gemara, but the implication is over there that maybe in principle both the kid and the animal should be executed because there was an avera over here. Elamai, because the kid is underage. Fine, we're not gonna execute him, but the animal maybe still yet. You would think over here by the same logic, maybe if the woman is being executed because she was overage, she's an Eshadish, maybe in that case the boy who was mizana with her, even though he's underage, even though he's between 9 and 13. Maybe should be executed also. Maybe there's sort of an idea of color, you know, involved over there as well. No, that would be the chiddush. That nevertheless, we don't say that.
It's
not so obvious.
Why should we apply two different standards?
Because if you see over there that he's
underage.
No, but because if you see over there that even that we see over there that when the cotton does above with an animal, then we say in principle the cotton should have been killed and the animal tactic is. But LMI, fine, the kid is underage, so we exempt it.
Otherwise,
we might have thought the same logic that applies to an adult and a behemoth, maybe the same logic should apply to an adult and a child. And the chiddush is that no. All right, let's go on. That's it. Okay. Then the pasuk continues, Asher yinachas eshes ish, that is mezana with an eshes ish. What does the word eshes ish come to exclude? Prapla eshes cotton, as opposed to if she's the wife of a cotton. And Tosfos points out, we can be talking about...
also considered an eshes ish?
No, that's the point. She's not. So Tosfos says, the point is, now the chora, of course, the cotton can't do kedushin. The chiddush is, even let's say, for example... a father can't do kedushin for his son. Well, in one exception he can, by an omar hevriya. An omar hevriya, where the father can do yield, he can decide that he wants to be the kaddish and marry this omar hevriya, or that he can be miyayed her for his son. That's one example Tosfos gives. Another one is, let's say, a nine-year-old who is a yavam and has relations with his yavama, where at least on a Daraisa level, it's considered a valid yibum. You would think maybe she's considered an Eshes Ish. The point is that not. The pasuk continues, Asher yinachas Eshes Re'ehu. Midaraisa.
How could she be an Eshes Ish?
No, she's not. Now her yavam, now this nine-year-old, and we have her.
Right.
Yeah, that's the point. So nevertheless, she's still not considered fully an Eshes Ish because her yavam is only nine. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The pasuk continues, Eshes Re'ehu, Asher yinachas Eshes Re'ehu. What is Eshes Re'ehu? The wife of his colleague. What does that come to exclude? Rav Hirsch mentions an interesting word in his commentary on Chumash. He brings from one of the early maskilim, a guy named Wesley. He says that maybe it comes to exclude. Let's say the husband agrees to his wife being mizana with somebody else. We still say it still doesn't work. But the Gemara is going to use it for a different drasha. That pratla eshes acherim. It means to as opposed to the wife of acherim. What is acherim? Rashi says it means a kusi. In uncensored Gemara, it actually says kusi or nochri or whatever. And the point is, a kusi or a nochri is not considered to have kiddushin. So therefore, their wife. Now, And we are going to learn in a couple of, in a couple of blocks when we talk about the whole concept of Sheva Mitzvot Menayach, we're going to see to a certain extent Goyim do have issues. So a marriage between two Goyim is legally recognized in Halakha. However, what we're saying over here is so, and there's actually different, there's different understanding. Are we saying that if a Yid were to be Mizana with a Goy's wife, or are we saying he's not Chayiv Misa, but he's not Chayiv Misa, but it's still Osir? Or are we saying maybe even we're saying relative between Goyim themselves there is issues. If one Goy is Mizana with another Goy's wife, then they're Chayiv Misa. But maybe not necessarily. If a Yid is Mizana with a Goy's wife, maybe not only he's not Chayiv Misa, maybe he's not over on the Issur of Eishes Ish, he's being over on other Issurim, but not necessarily on the Issur of Eishes Ish. Anyway, he's not liable to the death penalty is the point. Because a Goy is not Re'ehu. Okay, then the pasuk finishes Mos Yumas. He says he shall certainly be put to death. That means b'chenek. So after Omer b'chenek, so you're saying Mos Yumas means chenek. Oy ena ela ba'achas mekom misis amuris b'torah. Maybe it means to one of the other misses in the Torah. Amarta, you have to say like this. Kom mokom shenema misa b'torah sam. Any place where the Torah says generically that a person is chayiv misa without specifying what type of misa. You're not able to pull her to a stronger thing and make her and be mechayev her a stronger type of punishment. You can only go to the most lenient one. Since chene Rabbi Yoshi, this is Divrei Rabbi Yoshi. Rabbi Yoshi is saying like this. Since the Torah is saying just mot yumas, the Torah is telling you therefore you have to do the default misa, the most lenient misa. And what is the most lenient misa? According to the Chachamim, as we learned before, who Rabbi Yoshi agrees with, the most lenient is chenek. You have no basis to make it that it should be any harsher a punishment. Therefore, by default, it's chenek. Therefore, the Torah, in other words, he's saying the Torah doesn't even need to spell out what misa it is because we're meant to understand on our own. It has to be whatever the most lenient misa is. Since that's chenek, then that's what it is. On the other hand, Rabbi Yonasan says, Loi Mitneshi Kala. That's not why. It's not because Chenek is the most lenient. In fact, he holds like Rabbi Shimon that Chenek is not the most lenient. Hereg is. So it's not because of that. Ella, no, just we have the Kabbalah, Kol Misa Hamura Batorda Stam, any place where it says Misa in the Torah generically, Eina Ella Chenek. It's only Chenek. So that's it. We have that's how it is.
He agrees with Rabbi Shimon on the.
He agrees with Rabbi Shimon that Chenek is not the most lenient. So therefore, you can't say like Rabbi Yoshia that the Torah just tells you most yumas and you understood it means the most lenient one, because then it would be sayif, not then it would be hereg, not chenek. But because we have the Kabbalah that told me sam murat b'ster sam and chenek. So that's it. That's what it is. Chenek for Torah Shabbat Pe. Rebbe says on the face of it, the Gemara is on the face of it, and Rashi understands it that Rebbe is just explaining what Rabbi Yonasan says. Taka, where does Rabbi Yonasan get the idea that Kol Misahamur Batar Stamein and Chenek? There's a different explanation from Tosfos Rabbeinu Peretz that Rebbe is actually a third opinion. Rabbi Yonasan is just saying I have a Kabbalah. That's it. There's no proof for it from a pasuk. Rebbe is saying I agree with the concept, but I'll bring you a pasuk for it. Okay, like this. We find the Torah talks about people being killed b'dei shemayim. Rashi gives the example of Aaron Onan, where the pasuk is Vayomes Gamor Yisoy, and it was Misa b'dei shemayim. V'nema Misa b'dei Adam, and it also talks here we're talking about Misa b'dei Adam, Mois Yumas. Therefore, we make a hekesh, a shovel between them. Ma misa hamurabat b'dei shemayim misa shein baroshim. Just like when the Eidishta kills somebody, there's no mark on the body. There's no external mark of the death on the body. Af misa hamurab b'dei adam misa shein baroshim. The same thing. The misa, the generic misa that we're talking about, b'dei adam, where it doesn't specify what it is. Steal a straight for a headache. It has to be something that doesn't leave a mark. Namely, chenet. And that is why, again, in the Mishnah, that's why we have to use the hard scarf and the soft scarf. Otherwise, we'd be leaving a mark.
Still leave a mark.
Forensics investigators nowadays, I mean, they'll find there's a little bone in the throat, the hyoid bone that gets broken when a person is strangled. Fine, but you're not going to see it on external. You're not going to see it on the external of the body. You'd have to, if not an autopsy, at least you'd have to check more carefully. You're not going to see it at first glance. The question is Vayim Estreifa. Fine, but we learned before Estreifa doesn't leave a mark on the body either. Maybe it means that the generic Misa is Estreifa. The answer is no. Mido Amar Rachmona Bas Koyin V'Estreifa. Since the Torah singled out that only a Bas Koyin gets Estreifa when she's Mizana, as opposed to a Bas Yisrael does not, as we've discussed exhaustively before, what other ones she gets. Miklal the whole Bas Estreifa. He obviously, therefore, the Bas Yisrael, where it just says Mois Yumas generically, cannot be Estreifa. It must be some other Misa that doesn't leave a mark, namely Chenek.
Because what?
Because the Torah says, but generically, by the Noyef and the Neyef, by the people who committed adultery, most Yumas, then the Torah elsewhere tells us that a Bas Koyan who does the same thing gets Strafer. So the implication is a Bas Yisrael does not get the Strafer, she gets something else. But it has to be something else that doesn't leave a mark. Okay. Fine.
Strafer is something that also doesn't leave a mark?
Yeah, so therefore you would think, if you're just saying that Mois Yumas means it has to be something that doesn't leave a mark, Strafer doesn't either, maybe you should say every time the Torah says Mois Yumas, maybe it means they get Strafer. Strafer is they're burnt inside. Remember, it's hot lead poured down their throat. You weren't here when we discussed it yesterday.
No, not really.
So Gemara says, Bishleim a little Bjornison. Okay, I can understand according to Rabbi Yonason. Kidakov Fadosh, Rabbi Taima. Fine, Rabbi explained the reason behind what Rabbi Yonason says, called Misa Amur of Atar Stam in El Achenek, on the basis of that Zeta Shava between that and Misa Bidei Shemayim. El a little Yoshia, but according to Rabbi Yoshia, you got to ask, who says B'chol, there's such a concept of chenek? If he's saying, the point is, the Torah is saying, give him the default punishment is the most lenient one. So who says chenek exists at all? Maybe the most lenient one, a messiah. Maybe there's only three mitzvahs based in, of which the most lenient is sayef, hereg. Maybe that's what you're giving.
And not chenek.
Amar Rava, so Rava says no. Our mitzvah is gemara gemirilu. No, we have the Kabbalah, as halacha l'moshe misinai, that there are four mitzvahs based in, and they're named. They're named skila, strefa, hereg, and chenek. In fact, earlier Rashi says not only they're named, but the halacha l'moshe misinai actually said, or now actually said what order they go in as well. Although we had a machlokas on it. So, but at least we have them all named from Halacha L'Moshe Mitzinai. Therefore, we know there has to be Chenek. Given that Rabbi Yoshia hold that Chenek with the Chachamim, that Chenek is the most lenient, then therefore he can say that Iyat Rashoi Lahachmir Alah, then you're not able to be Machmir any more than Chenek unless you have a pasuk to that effect. So therefore, the default is Chenek. Yeah. Okay. Fine. My loy mitnei kala. What does Rabbi Yonason mean when he says the reason is not because Chenek is the most lenient? It's Kamif, the Gibbutz Kofta, the Rabbi Shimon Rabbanan. It means that Rabbi Yoshia and Rabbi Yonason are having the exact same machalikas as Rabbi Shimon and the Chachamim. Rabbi Yoshia holds like the Chachamim that Chenek is the most lenient. Therefore, he can say that the default is the most lenient, Chenek. Rabbi Yonason, who doesn't agree with that, he holds like Rabbi Shimon that Hereg is the most lenient. He's going to have to bring his limud. Either he has just his generic statement, I have a Kabbalah called Misamur of Atar Stam En El Chenek, or he has Rebbe's explanation on the basis of the comparison with Mitzvah Bidei Shemayim.
So that's that.
Omer Reb Zera L'Abaye. So now Reb Zera asks Abaye like this. Sharan is Skolin. Now we have in the next Mishnah. This piece of Gemara really belongs kind of to the next Mishnah. I'm not sure why it's here instead of after the next Mishnah, but okay. Sometimes the Gemara does that. Actually, the reason is because when we use the same argument, the same argument that Rabbi Yoshia used before, we're going to use in this connection also. Okay. Now the next Mishnah is going to list 18 averus for which a person is chayiv skila. Not all of them does the Torah specify that they're chayiv skila.
How many we do know?
Well, I don't remember exactly, but some of them the Torah says. What it is like this: by Oven Yidoni is the only one of them where the Torah explicitly says Oven Yugmu Oisam.
So 17 of them are not specified.
Listen. By that one, it specifically says, by Oven Yudoni, the last plus of the Parashas Kedoshim, V'isho Yishaki Yabam Oven Yudoni Moisi Masu, V'Oven Yugamu Oisam Dmehem Ba. Now, so you have three expressions in that plus, Moisi Masu, V'Oven Yugamu, and Dmehem Ba. There's a number of other places, there's a number of other ones that of the lists that we're going to have in the next Mishnah, where the Torah uses the expression Moisi Masu and Dmehem Ba. And we learn by Xavier Shava from Oven Yudoni that it means they all get skila. So the question is, we have two expressions. Sharan Iskolin Deleksibu Skila, the rest of the other Niskolin, all the other 17 ones of the next Mishnah, where Deleksibu Skila, it doesn't say explicitly in the positive that they should be stoned. Or actually, so actually, Rashi says no. I'm wrong about that. Rashi mentions there's a few others that there's a few others. Rashi says Avodah Zarah,
a few others that the Torah says
Skila. Specifically says Skila. Sorry, Avodah Zarah, Naira Hamayrosa, Chilul Shabbos, Oiv Yidoni, and Megadeth.
Right.
Oiv Yidoni I think count as one. So Naira Avodah Zarah, Naira Hamayrosa, Chilul Shabbos, Oiv Yidoni, and Megadeth. Yeah, fine. So those each one of those the Torah explicitly says that they get Skila. All the other ones we learn by Gzera Shava from Oven Yidoni. But by Oven Yidoni, you have two expressions. It says, again, the pasuk says, Moisyu, Visha Yishakiyavam Oven Yidoni, Moisyu Masu, Bo Oven Yugumu Oysam, which means Skila, Dmehem Bom. So the question is, B'mai Gamri, which expression are we using for the Gzera Shava? The Moisyu Masu Gamri, are we learning the Gzera Shava based on the word Moisyu Masu? Gamri, or are we learning using the word Mambam? No, not so much redundant, but wait. Almost
three different Moisyumas.
Moisyumas, but even Yugamu, they we need, because we need to tell that it's, yeah.
So the other,
it's not so much redundancy as really which one are we using, and we're going to see, the Gemara is going to explain soon what Rab Zera's problem was. We learn it from the word dmehem bom. Whenever the Torah says by any avera dmehem bom, it means skila.
Dmehem
bom. Their blood is on them. The simple meaning of it, it means that they're the ones responsible for their death, nobody else. But we learn by Exeter Shabbat that it means, just like it says dmehem bom by Oven Yudoni, so also any place else where it says dmehem bom, by a bunch of the Arayas, for example, it says dmehem bom. Okay.
We learn from
Oven Yudoni to all the others. And the reason is the Ibra Moisyu Mosu Gamri. This is similar to what you're saying about it being redundant, because after all, if we were learning from Moisyu Mosu, Dmeyam Momali, then why would it need to say Dmeyam Bum by each of those? So the question is, Elamai Dmeyam Gamri? So fine, ask the other way around. And if we learn from Dmeyam Bum, Moisyu Mosu Momali, then what are we using Moisyu Mosu for? The answer is Kibitanya. The answer is Moisyu Mosu is not extra because we need that for a different limud. Kidatanya, namely, we learn in a braisa, when the pasuk says mois yumas hamaka retzeachu, when the pasuk says about a murderer in Parshas Maaseh, the one who struck somebody else, killed him, shall be put to death. He is a retzeach. Aimly elav misak surbay. Now, based on that pasuk, you would only know that you're supposed to kill him with the appropriate penalty, which, as we learned before, is hereg, is chopping his head off. But how do we know that even if you're not able to kill him with the type of misa that it says by him, namely hereg, how do we know you'd be able to execute him in some other way? How do we know that? Let's say you can't chop off his head for whatever reason. He's running away. Rashi mentioned, we learned in the previous paragraph that Rashi says, for example, let's say it would mean that then you could shoot an arrow at him. Let's say, even though that's not one of the Dalet Misa's faces. How do we know? Top of the most you must hamakim. Therefore, the pasuk says most you must hamakim. He should be killed no matter what. And therefore, therefore that it applies. So some of the mafarshim say some of the rishonim learn therefore that since by each of the niskolim it says the word most you musu. So we learn that this applies across the board to all the niskolim. They would hold it doesn't necessarily apply to all the misses based. The Rambam holds it applies more generically to all the misses based.
It says most you must.
Same thing. But it can be from the same shorish. It doesn't have to be the exact same words. Sometimes you even have at least one place where there's a shorish of two different shorishes, a shorish akarin or var akarin, in connection with the dinim of taras of houses. So you have, yeah. Okay. Fine.
So that's similar enough.
Yeah. Okay, so that's it. So therefore, for most Yumasu, we learn that they can be executed with some other method if necessary. Dmehem Bum is what we actually use to learn that each of these cases that's listed in the next Mishnah are going to be Chayiv Skila, even
so
the ones with... It's not a Klal HaKrat. Two different things. Wait. Two different dinim that we're learning over there. But when we say, again, by the Oven Yudonim, when we say most Yumasu, Ba'evin Yugumu Dmehem Bum. Most Yumasu teaches if you're not able to execute them with Ba'evin Yugumu, then do some other way. Ba'evin Yugumu is the actual way that you do it. Dmehem Bom is used for one end of a Gzeira Shava, where the other end of that Gzeira Shava is by each of the Elohein and Eskolin of the next Mishnah, where it says Dmehem Bom by them, the ones that it doesn't spell out in the Torah, otherwise if they get Skila, like as opposed to the five that Rashi mentioned, where we learn by the word Dmehem Bom if they get Skila. So Rav Achami Difti asks Ravina, the Iber Moisu Mosu Gamri. So let's say we did learn it from the word Moisu Mosu. My Kokashalai. What exactly was Reb Zera's difficulty? Why is it, in other words, so when Abaya tells him we learn from Dmei Hembam, then that puts them at ease. What was the premise of his question to begin with? It wasn't just the extra words in the pasuk. We have to say that the premise of his question was that otherwise we're not going to understand how we do the limud at all.
If
Abaya were to have answered him that we learn from Moisu Masu and we learn the word and we use the word Mayhem Bum for some other limud, that wouldn't appease Reb Zera. Why not? It's like this. Are you going to say that Abzera's question was, in that case, what do you do about Eishas Ish, where the Torah says Mois Yumas, and we said before Eishas Ish you get Chenech, where the question is, you might ask, if you're going to learn everybody who gets skila, if you're going to use the Gzeda Shava, Mois Yumas or Mois Yumasu, then you would have to say an Eishas Ish gets skila. And we know that she doesn't, because we said before she gets Chenech. So therefore, you could say that was Reb Zera's problem. That's why he wanted to know which one we learned from. The problem with that is, he wouldn't have had to ask, why wouldn't we learn Eishas Ish from Oven Yidoni? Malahalam the skill off kind of skiller, just like the Oven Yidoni to get skiller, that an Eishas Ish should get skiller. And therefore, Reb Zera's problem is, why aren't we doing that? Reb Zera shouldn't have that question. Mida Omer Rachmana Arusa Beskila, because since we know the Torah says that a Naira Hamayrosa, who is also an Eishas Ish after all, gets Skila, only in that case, Miklal the Nisra will have the Skila. Automatically, that teaches us that a regular married woman doesn't get Skila. So even if we were learning from Moisu Masu, Reb Zera would have no reason to ask, well, why don't we learn Eishas Ish from Oven Yidoni and say we give her skila. It would be obvious based on a different factor, based on Naira Mayrosa versus Nisua, that it can't possibly be skila for her. And that therefore most Yumas by the Eishas Ish has to mean something different. So that can't have been the premise of Reb Zera's question. The Elamaka of Ima'i Kokashalei. So maybe you're going to say then, maybe Reb Zera's problem was about the case where a person hits his father or his mother, where, as we're going to learn later on in Arma Sechta, he's one of the six people who gets Chenek. Where, again, you could ask, and again, the Pasuk says, by him, Mois Yumas. And again, you could ask then, you would think to ask, why are you not learning Maka Ova Ve'imai by Zeta Shava from the word Moisu Mosu from Oven Yidoni? The answer is, you could say that Maka Ova Ve'imai gets Skila.
Right.
Maka Ova Ve'imai Moisu Mosu, the Pasuk tells us. So you would think, Reb Zera could have been asking, why don't we give him Maka Ova Ve'imai Skila? Mm-hmm. The answer is, Reb Zera cannot have had that question. Because, given that we have most, you're going to say you have most Yumasu by a case of Oven Yidoni, which means Skila. You have now a case of most Yumas by Eishas Ish, which means Chenek, as we established before, by elimination, because it can't mean Skila. Well, once you have one that we learned Skila and the other that we learned Chenek, obviously, ad degami me'ovi yidoni, ligmu me'eishas ish. Obviously, instead of learning from Oven Yidoni to be machmer on them, necessarily you'd have to learn from Eishas Ish. Because the same logic we said before, you can't schlep him to a more stringent death unless you have proof for it. So if you have one way to learn from Skila, Oven Yidoni, the other to learn from Eishas Ish, Chenek, obviously you're going to go to Eishas Ish. You're going to choose the most lenient one. So therefore, that can't have been the problem with Reb Zera's question. So therefore, had Abaya answered Reb Zera, we learn the Chayve Skila, we learn from the word Mois Yumas, Reb Zera could not have asked, how do we know that in that case, by these two cases of Chenek, where it says Mois Yumas, that it can't be skila, because one of them by elimination can't be skila, and the other one we could just as well learn from it with a Zeir Shava. Amalei, so Ravina answers him, Shara Niskolin Gufayu Kokashalei. Yes, but Zeir's question was about all Faket, it was about all the other Niskolin, all the other 16 Niskolin that we're going to have in the next Mishnah, or 17, whatever. That he's asking like this again. So you have Oven Yidoni where the Torah spells out Skila. You have the four other ones that Rashi mentioned where the Torah also spells out Skila. So fine, those we don't have any question of. But all the other ones that the next Mishnah is going to mention, Eim, Eishes Ha'av, Kala, etc., all of those, the Torah uses the expression Mosu Mosu and Mehem Bo. The question was like this: if you're learning from Mosu Mosu, Iba Mosu Mas Gamri, then you could ask the same thing. Then you could argue the same thing. Ad the Gamri Ma Ovi Yedoni Ligmu Ma Eshes Ish. Instead of learning from Ovi Yedoni and giving them Skila, why aren't you learning from Eshes Ish and giving them Chenek? Because you can't take them to a more stringent death. And therefore, that's what Abaya answered him. No, we're not learning in those cases from Mos Yumas, which Shaka would have to mean Chenek then. We're learning from Dmei Hembom. That Rav Zeira accepted that. Because Dmei Hembom, Shaka, we only find by these 12 or 13 or whatever it is, ones, 13, aside from the five that Rashi mentioned, we have plus by Ovi Nidoni, as there's one end of the Zeira Shava. And therefore, yes, we can say Dmei Hembom teaches us, if we only had Mos Yumas by each of them, yes, we would have to assume it means Chenek. Because it says Mehem Bum, that allows us
only
to
use
only in those remaining 13. So that's what allows us to say that it means that they get skilla. That and therefore that's the Zeta Shava that we use, and we use most Yumasu for the different limud before about a different mitzvah.
And the problem that we had before was that what?
So the Reb Zeta was asking, which one do we use? The reason why Reb Zeira was asking the question is because if Abaya had answered him, we use Mosu Mosu to learn that they get Skila, then Reb Zeira would have asked, why do we use Mosu Mosu to say they get Skila by learning from Oiv and Yidoni? Why do we not use it to learn that they get Chenek like Eshes Ish? Once he's answered that, no, never mind Mosu Mosu, that has nothing to do with the limud of what Misa they get, we use Mehem Bum, then fine, that settles it. Mishnah says, Elu Heinan Eskol, and the following people get Skila. Some of them, as we said before, it actually says Skila. The rest of them, again, it says Mehem Bom and Ulun by Xer Shabbat. Habala Aim, somebody has relations with his mother. These are all the 18 cases. Habala Aim, somebody has relations with his mother. Baal Esha Sa'av, or his father's wife, meaning who's not his mother, meaning his stepmother. Baal Akala, and by the way, a mother doesn't necessarily have to be his father's wife either, as we're going to see in the Gemara. A mother could be somebody his father was Mazana with outside of marriage or whatever. And yeah, okay. Baal Akala, or his daughter-in-law. Baal Tzchur, or male. Vala Behema, or having relations with a Behema. Va Isham Avias a Behema, also a woman who has relations as a passive partner with a Behema. Va Magadif, somebody who curses the Eivishta. Va Ovid Averis Kechavim, somebody who worships Avodah Zarah. Va Noisin Mizara La Moloch, somebody who gives from his children to Moloch. Now, you would ask, isn't Moloch another form of Avodah Zarah? Later on in our parak, we're going to deal with, there's going to be a machloikus over there, whether Moloch is an Avodah Zarah or not, or whether it's just a minyag that the Goyim had. Our Tana holds according to that second opinion. It's not an Avodah Zarah per se, but it is a minhag of the
Goyim, basically.
Yeah, we'll see in the Gemara. We'll get to in the Samach about this. That's the Machlokas Rishonim. That's the Machlokas Rishonim. No, not necessarily. The Rashi versus the Ramban versus other Rishonim talk about. We'll get to it later on in the Samach. We'll get to it. There's different opinions whether the baby was actually supposed to be burnt or whether just they walked through and came out the other side, whatever. Anyway, our Mishnah holds that Moloch is not Avodah Zarah, but rather a Chukas Agoyim, and therefore it's a separate type of Israel. Or Baal Ovi Yedoni, somebody who does Ovi Yedoni.
That is.
Yeah. Well, it's not necessarily, no, those are types of Kishuf. The Rambam says they're all, Kishuf is a magic, black magic. They're all, the Rambam says they're all related to Avodah Zarah. Okay, so the Rambam says that the ancient Goyish priests and whatever used to use Kishuf in order to convince the people, look, I have magical powers, whatever I say goes, therefore if I say to worship this being, then you should do that, or words to that effect. In fact, the Rambam includes the halakha of Kishuf in Hilchos Avodah Zarah. But it is actually a separate issue. Yeah.
And they have these powers to rule Kishuf.
Yeah. Vamachal is a Shabbos. Somebody who breaks Shabbos, v'amakal of the imay, a person who curses his father or mother, v'abal naira ma'irasa, somebody who has relations with the naira ma'irasa, v'amesis, somebody who convinces an individual to worship Avodah Zarah. Doesn't even have to mean he's successful, and even if he just tries to convince him, that itself makes him chayav mitzvah. Yeah, v'amediach, somebody who does the same thing to a city, that's the one who makes a city into an ionidachas. V'amachashif, somebody who does kishuf, which is a different type than Ovin Yidoni. There's a number of different types of kishuf that the Torah answers. Or Ben Soramora and Ben Soramora.
Only after Masantara, or these others were before Masantara, like kishuf.
We'll learn in a few days. We're going to get to the whole sugya on Shev Mitzvah Nenaya. We're going to discuss whether kishuf was also to goyim or not.
Said that, I think,
Yosef Nechashi, okay, but he was really doing Kishuf, though, he was pretending to, right? Yeah, no, he wasn't doing okay.
He had powers of Kishu?
What? So he claimed, for example, to be using his goblet to know what order to feed his brothers in. He needed Kishu. Yeah, he needed Kishu for that. He recognized them. They thought it was magic.
No, that's dumb. I understand. But did he have powers of Kishu? No?
Why should we assume he did? Okay. So that was the 18. The fellowship deal a bit with the order, why we have them listed in this order that they are in the Mishnah. They talk about different possibilities. Maybe we're listing first the ones that are high of Kares, if you do it amazing, but without Aden Basra, and then the ones that are not. Maybe we're listing Tosfos Yom Tov talks about more or less they're listed according to the order of the Psukim. So, for example, Ben Sotah Ramoda comes last, is in Parshas Ki Tse, towards the end of the Torah, etc. A few different explanations. 17 of those are going to be dealt with in our Perek. The remaining one, Ben Sotah Ramoda, is going to be held over for the next Perek. We've got details. Okay. So, some details about the first couple of them. Habala Aim, somebody has relations with his mother. If his father is still married to her, Chayav Aleha, Mishum Aim, Mishum Eishas Av, then he's Chayav on two counts. Number one, she's his mother. Number two, she's his father's wife. Now, what's the relevance of two counts? You can't kill a person twice. Rashi says we're talking about if it was B'shege. How many Chatois is he going to have to? How many Korbanos Chatois is he going to have to bring? Other Mephoshim talk about it can even be mazid. If he's doing it the mazid, they can give him hasra for one or the other. They can say, this is your mother, or they can say, this is your father's wife. Either one works. Rabbi Yehuda says, no, you're only chayiv on the one count of aim, for reasons that we'll see in the Gemara.
That's if he didn't know it was...
No. Well, again, according to Rashi, it would mean b'shoge. I mean, everybody agrees that they didn't. Everybody agrees with the dinim. It's just how we learn the Mishnah. But yeah, when you mean according to Rabbi Yehuda, if you did it b'shoge, you'd only be chayiv one half. That's not two like that's common yet. According to the other explanation, it would mean they daft have to give Masra that that this is your mother. Yeah. Okay.
And
the halacha is like a chum, as usual. Habal Eshesav, somebody has relations with his father's wife, who's not his mother, his stepmother. Chayev Mishum Eshesav, Mishum Eshesish. Then he's Chayev on two counts. She's his father's wife, and she's Eshesish. Tosfos points out, by the way, the previous case of the Mishnah had to have been talking about the previous case, Habala Eim. It was not that his father was, I said it wrongly. It's not that his father was married to her anymore. His father could be dead or divorced from her. Nevertheless, she's still his mother. She still was his father's wife. That's enough. The mission didn't bother mentioning Eishas Ish because it's obvious. But here we're talking about, in the second case, where we're talking about Eishas Av, then we have to point out there can be a case where we have to be talking about when she's still married, then there's two counts.
The investigation in the previous case was when she was not.
Right. All of this applies whether the father is alive or whether after the father is dead. Either way, the Eishes Av is still also. Bein mina Eirusin, bein mina Nisurin, whether they were only Eirusin or whether Nisurin, either way, she is also to the son.
And when she's a Kusha.
Same thing.
Still also.
Yeah. Habar Kolosso, another case, somebody has relations with his daughter-in-law. Chayev Aleha Mishum Kolosso or Mishum Eishes Ish. He's Chayev on her on the grounds that she's his daughter-in-law and on the grounds that she's an Eishes Ish. Bein b'chayev b'nei bein la'acha mitzvah b'nei, whether his son is alive or whether his son is dead, which the Ran explains. If his son is dead, she's not an Eishes Ish anymore. One of the Ran's explanations on this is it means, let's say she remarried somebody else. You would think maybe she's not considered Kolosso, maybe she's not considered your daughter-in-law anymore. Nope, she's still considered your daughter-in-law forever.
So she still has to be an Eshetish,
but... No. If she's not an Eshetish, if she's just a Pnuya, then you're chayav only on one count, Kolosso.
Okay.
But even if she remarried somebody else, you shouldn't think, well, now she's not your daughter-in-law anymore, now she's somebody else's daughter-in-law. Nevertheless, no, she's still chayav on Kolosso and Eshetish, because now, yeah. Bein mina Eirusin, bein mina Nesurin, again, whether she was just an Arusa or an Asura to your son, either way, yeah. Gemara says, Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, Rabbi Yehuda Omer. Now,
daughter,
we did that straight, but that's what we're going to deal with on a later paragraph. We're going to deal with why it is, by the way, why certain arayas should be skila and certain others strafa, and it's hard to know. I haven't really found any good explanation of it, so I don't know. Some of them is not Mrs. Basin at all. Some of them is only Korah. But that's how it is. Okay. Fine. Now, in the Mishnah we had, in connection with one mother, where we had two opinions. We had the Chamim saying that you chayev on the grounds that she's your mother and that she's your father's wife, assuming your father was ever married to her. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda said you only chayev mishum ein. Now in the Braisa, we're going to learn another version of what Rabbi Yehuda is saying. Tanya Rabbi Yehudaim, im loy hoyse imei ru'uya l'aviv, if his mother was not suitable to his father, in other words, that his father would not have been able to be mekadosh, or wouldn't have had kedushin, wouldn't have been toifus, ein chayv al mishum ein bo pas. Then he's only chayv mishum ein. But in other words, according to this braisa, it would come out if they would have been able to get married, at least on a deraisa level, or not even, never mind a deraisa, but we're going to discuss something more soon. But let's say, for example, she was only also to him, let's say, as an isur lav or an isur shniyas or whatever, and they, according to the Mishnah, we would still say, Rabbi Yehuda says, you still only chayv mishum aim for the one count. The braisa would say, Rabbi Yehuda and the braisa would be saying, then I agree with the chachamim, you chayv for two counts. Because she was your father's wife, at least on a deraisa level.
That's how
the braisa differs from the Mishnah, that they're according to the braisa, only if kedushin wouldn't have been toifus at all. Okay. My einu ru'uyeloi. See, I have to ask, what do you mean einu ru'uyeloi? Ilei mechayv krisus v'chayv misus beis din. If you're going to say that it means that there was an isur koris or isur misus beis din involved, for example, she was his sister or his daughter or what have you. My Nechlal, the Rabbanon, Savri, Apagab, the Enero, your life. What do you mean? And the Rabbanon would hold that in that case she's still considered Ashes of it. Holes like Kedushin, Nagaba. Obviously, Kedushin aren't Taifas. She can't possibly be considered Ashes of it. So even the Rabbanon would have to agree you only have the count of Mishrum A. No, we have to say that Enero Uya, Rabbi Yehuda's Enero Uya, means that there's an Isur Lab that would prevent them from getting married. For example, she's an Amzeret, or she's an Almana and he's a Kohen Gadol, or whatever. So the Chachamim hold that Kedushin are Toifus. But Rabbi Yehuda sava like Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Yehuda holds like Rabbi Akiva. Dama ein Kedushin Toifus in B'chayvi Lavin, where Rabbi Akiva holds that Kedushin are not Toifus in B'chayvi Lavin. So in other words, for example, So Rabbi Akiva would say, for example, that a Yisrael and a Mamzeret, Kedushin are not Toifus. Therefore, Rabbi Yehuda agrees with that. Rabbi Yehuda of the Braita at least agrees with that. So therefore, he's saying if she's Einar or Uyala Aviv, in other words, Kedushin, we're not Tophis, then it's only Mishuma Ein Bilvav. But if Kedushin are Tophis, then Rabbi Yehuda of the Braita would agree with the Chachamim of our Mishnah that you can be Chayiv on two counts, Mishum Ein or Mishum Eishasav, because she was legally his wife.
And the Chachamim doesn't agree with
that. The Chachamim hold that Kedushin are Tophis, but Chayiv Alav anyway, yeah.
They didn't do the same. I mean, Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Yehuda.
Rabbi Yehuda was one of the Talmidim. Rabbi Akiva. He wants his massive Rabbi Oshia. Rabbi Oshia says, "I have a contradiction to this explanation of this that you're explaining, Rabbi Yehuda, according to Rabbi Akiva. I have a problem with that. We learn in Yevamos, Isu mitzvah v'isu kedusha. If you have the Yevama is also to her Yavam on the basis of a mitzvah." Which we'll explain in the Gemara in a second what that means, the Isu Kedusha, or if she's also came on the basis of a matter of Kedusha, in those cases, Chalitza v'lo misyabnis. They have to have Chalitza because, now, had she been also to him in a way that Kedusha are not Toifas, for example, as we the first Mishnah in Yevamos talks about, for example, Bas Ochiv, for example, a man marries his niece, where we learned back then that then if the Yavam is the father of that woman, he can't do Yivam with her, she's his daughter, and Chalitza is not even necessary because she's an Erva. So she's an Erva to him. So therefore, no Chalitza is necessary even. But no, Reuven was married to his niece, Shimon's daughter. Reuven dies, Shimon is now the Yavam. We don't say Shimon obviously can't do Yibum because that would be his daughter. He doesn't need to do Chalitza either because the whole thing goes out as we learned back in Yevamos.
That's according to everybody.
But the Mishnah says they were Yevamos. That on the other hand, let's say she wasn't also to him mitzad. Let's say she wasn't also to him mitzad an erva. She was also to him only mitzad a mitzvah, which we'll see in a second, or mitzad kedusha. Then midaraisa kedushin would be toifus. Therefore, midaraisa yibum should have to be done in theory, but it can't be done because of the isur mitzvah or the isur kedusha. Therefore, chaltus v'lo misyabnis. Therefore, for her to be mutter to marry anybody else, she needs chalitza. Yibum can't be done. And we explain over there in the Mishnah, isur, what is mitzvah? Isur mitzvah means shnias medivrei sofrim. Isur mitzvah means the various second degree relatives, which are also midrabanan. Namely, for example, midaraisa, you're not allowed to marry your mother or have relations with your mother. Midrabanan, the same thing applies to your grandmother. So imagine, So let's say, for example, you had two brothers, Reuven and Shimon.
Right.
Let's say they're from different mothers. They're from different mothers. So Reuven, for example, marries Shimon's grandmother. Reuben marries Shimon's grandmother. Then Reuben passes away. Now, if we were to say on a Midaraisa level, Shimon should be able to do Yibum with his grandmother. She's not also She's not also Tam Daraisa. But Midrabanon she is. Therefore, he needs to do Chalitza.
And
that's called Isur Mitzvah.
It's kind of not to, so people shouldn't confuse.
Yeah, so people shouldn't confuse. If you're allowed to marry your grandmother, people may come to marry you. And Vamai Korolahu Isur Mitzvah. Why do we call that Isur Mitzvah? What's the mitzvah? Shemitzvah, the Shemayah, Divah Chacham, because the mitzvah is to listen to what the Chacham say. And Isur Kedusha, when we say that there's an the Isur Kedusha, what does that mean? It means the ones that involve the Kedusha of a Kohen. Amon al Kohen Gadol, Grush of a Chalutz al Kohen Hedyet. Why do we call it Isur Kedusha? Because the pasuk says the kohenim should be holy to Hashem. So therefore, anything that has to
be
fine, but the kohenim have an extra special higher level of kedusha. So therefore, that's what we said before about a bas kohen that she's mizana, that she brings down her father's level of kedusha. Yeah. Now we learn they should be holy. Applies only to the kohen.
It doesn't apply to us.
We have it. So one second. We learn in a brisa. Rabbi Yehuda switches around the definition. Rabbi Yehuda says Isur mitzvah is the ones that are also to the kohenim. Because Rashi says those mitzvahs are given in Sefer Vayikra, and the last pasuk of Sefer Vayikra begins Eilah mitzvahs. So therefore, mitzvahs that have to do specifically with kohenim can be characterized as mitzvahs, as opposed to Isur Kedusha, he would say, are the ones that are also to all Jews. For example, the Shnius, because Kedoshim to you, because the pasuk says to all Jews that you should be Kaddish. The point is, the pasuk Kedoshim Yilel Kehem only applies to kohenim, but there's a different pasuk Kedoshim to you, which applies to all Jewish people. So Rabbi Yehuda holds on that basis, we should call the Isur Shnius, the ones that are also collectively to all Jewish people.
Kedoshim to you doesn't apply also to a kohenim.
Right? It does, but it applies equally to everybody. Shnius also applies equally to everybody. A man's not allowed to marry his grandmother, Midrabanan, whether he's Yisrael or a kohen. So the point is, Chalufi Hu Demachlif, so what do we see from that? Rabbi Yehuda switches around the definitions of Isur Mitzvah and Isur, and Isur Kedusha. He switches around the definitions, but he agrees with what the Chachamim are saying. Ha Chalitza Boya, he agrees that in either of those cases, you're going to need Chalitza. The problem is, the Isak Radach Rabbi Yehuda Ki Rabbi Akiva Svirulai, if you're going to say that Rabbi Yehuda agrees with Rabbi Akiva, that Chayve Lavin are not Kiddush and are not Tofus, which in that case, Chayve Lavin, according to his definition, are what we call in the Mishnah Isur Kedusha, then why should he need Chalitza? Mechti Chayve Lavin and Rabbi Akiva Chayve Krisis Dami, a case of an Isur Lav, for a case of an Isur Lav, for example, an Amon of a Kohen Gadol or a Mamzeres or whatever, is equally well. It is not Tofus according to Rabbi Akiva, just as much as an Isur Karis is not Tofus according to the Rabbanon. V'chayve Krisis Lav Nechalitza V'yivam Minu, and Chayve Krisis, a sister or a daughter or whatever, or all the other first level Arayas, are not subject to Chalitza and Yivam. So why would Rabbi Yehuda, besides switching, if you're going to say Rabbi Yehuda agrees with Rabbi Akiva, besides switching around the definition, he should also say, what I hold is Isur Mitzvah, namely Amona, a Kohen Gadol, etc., the Chal doesn't need Chalitza, because Kedushin wouldn't be Tofus between an Amona and a Kohen Gadol, for example.
According to
if we understand Rabbi Yehuda to say like Rabbi Akiva. So how can we say that? The answer is with Barabi
that he doesn't. Agree with Rabbi Yehuda.
That's what we have to assume now. But the answer is no. The Dvar of the Tanakhama, Palmer. No, Rabbi Yehuda is switching around the definition according to the Tanakhama. He's saying, according to you, Tanakhama, who holds that an Amon of a Kohen Gadol, for example, should need Chalitza, fine, but there's no reason you should be calling it Isur Kedusha, you should be calling it Isur Mitzvah on the basis of the Pasuk Eilah Mitzvah. The Leila, he himself doesn't necessarily have to hold that way because he himself could hold that she doesn't need Chalitza at all because Kedushin wouldn't even be Tofus. And therefore, that she would be in the same category as, for example, a daughter or a mother or whatever. All the other cases, yeah. Okay. So far in the Gemara, then we have three different opinions. We have about Aim and Eshesav. We have the Chachamim in our Mishnah that as long as she was married to your father, then she's considered Eshesav. And then if you mizana with her, you chayv on both grounds. Aim and Eshesav. We had Rabbi Yehuda in the Mishnah that regardless, you only chayev for Aim, whether they were married or not. And you have Rabbi Huda and the Braisa, who says if Kiddushin are not able to be Toifus, namely if it was Chayve Lavin or higher, then you can't be, even if they got married illegally, you can't call it Eishes Av, because according to him, Kiddushin weren't Toifus, therefore only Aim. But if there was no such thing, if there was no Issu Lav involved, and they did it, so then if they got married, Rabbi Huda would agree with the Chachamim that you can be Chayve for Eishes Av as well. Different than what he says in the Mishnah.
In the Mishnah,
Rabbi Huda said, regardless, whether she was married or not, you can never be chayav for more than Aim. You can never be chayav for Aim and Eishes Av at the same time. According to the Braisa, there can be cases where you can be chayav for Aim and Eishes Av, namely if they were married, same as the Chachamim. The only difference between Rabbi Huda and the Braisa and the Chachamim is Rabbi Huda and the Braisa holds that if there was an Issur Lav involved, Kiddushin aren't Toifus, therefore she can't be called Eishes Avicha. Whereas a Chacham holds Kedushin or Tofus, and she can be called Eishes Avicha. Fine. Now, though, Ki Asir Rabbi Yitzchak, when Rabbi Yitzchak came from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel, Tani Kiditznan, he learned Rabbi Yehuda's version, not like we learned that Rabbi Yehuda says anything different than what he says in the Mishnah, but exactly what he says in the Mishnah, Kiditznan, as we learn in our Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda, Ime Ene Chayiv Ela Meshomayim Bovav, that Rabbi Yehuda says, regardless whether they were married or not, you can never be chayiv for more than Aim, and you can never be chayiv for Aim and Eishes Av at the same time. And the Chachamim say always, yeah. So then we have to ask the time of Mai. In that case, then we have to ask, what is Rabbi Huda's reason why he should say that you can't be chayiv for Aim and Eishes Av together? Amar Abaya to Amakro, because the pasuk says like this. The whole pasuk goes like this. You have a pasuk in Parshas Achrei, right, that says, Ervas Avicha Lo Tzigala, you should not be Megala your father's erva. We're going to discuss later on in the Gemara, we'll get to tomorrow. Does that mean having relations with your father himself, or does it mean his wife? Anyway, Ervas Avicha Lo Tzigala, she is your mother, you should not be megala her erva. So the pasuk is imcha hi. So Rabbi Huda understands that to mean mishum imay at miut, mishum imay at mechayev. You can only be mechayev on the basis that she's your mother. V'yat mechayev mishum eishes av. You can't be mechayev the guy on the basis of eishes av. That's the miut from the word imcha hi. She is your mother. Meaning, in other words, that if, therefore, if a man is mezana with her, even though she was Eishes Av as well, was or is Eishes Av as well, nevertheless, we can only get him on the Aim. Because therefore, the pasuk is Imchahi, to imply the only reason you can get him on is Imchahi.
Is one law, basically.
So the question is, Elamayasa, by that logic, what about the next pasuk that continues? Eres Eishes Avicha Leitigala Eres Avichahi. What about the next pasuk that says, the erva of your father's wife, you should not uncover. That is the erva of your father. What would that imply if you're going to understand the pasuk the same way? Are you going to say mishum eishes av at mechayev v'at mechayev mishum imoy? Then you're going to say in that case you can only be mechayev him on the basis of the father's wife, but not on the basis of aim. Ella, then you got to ask imoy shehi eishes aviv. And so what happens if she's both? What happens if she's your mother and she's eishes aviv? Koy hochol ma'itla, koy hochol ma'itla. So what are you going to say? The first pasuk is excluding her on the basis that she's that only aim. The second pasuk is saying only on the basis of Eishes Av. So what is she going to be mosu to you? Hashta ima sheina Eishes Av b'chayim. If you're going to say that a mother who's not Eishes Av, you're chayim on her. Eishes Av sheina ima b'chayim. And you're going to say that you're chayim for Eishes Av who's not your mother. Ima she Eishes Av b'chayim. Wow. What are you going to say? If she's mother and Eishes Av, you're not going to be chayim at all. Rashi brings that explanation. Rashi also gives another girsa in the Gemara that leaves out the part after Mamayat law, the whole line and a half over here that begins from Hashta until Lo Mechayev Klal. Rashi's second explanation is we don't really need that. The Gemara is not asking the logic that you wouldn't be Chayev at all. The Gemara is just asking how do you have the psukim seem to be contradicting each other. Are you going based on Eishes Av or are you going based on Aim? Never mind the question of what would happen if she's both. The psukim just seem to be contradicting each other. What is the ground that you can get him on?
They contradict each other
because one implies that the only grounds you can get him on is Aim. The other implies the only grounds you can get him on is Eishes Av. No. That's the Girsa we have here in our Gemara. That's actually his first explanation.
Okay.
The second explanation is never mind that Girsa. Never mind the question, is there a case where you'd be, hypothetically, could there be a case you potter on both? The question is just, it's a contradiction. And if a person is Mizana with his mother who is also Eishes Aviv, do you get him on the basis of Imoy, as the first pasuk says, or do you get him on the basis of Eishes Aviv, as the second pasuk says? But they seem to be contradicting each other. It has to be one or the other on the face of it. The two, and not only that, the Rabbanan Amiyaksiv Imchahi. What are the Rabbanan going to do with the word Imchahi? It says in the pasuk, they have the same pasuk. So we can't explain it that way. No, we have to say, according to the Rabbanon, the answer would be, what do they do with the word imchadi? They use it for a limud that Rav Shisha B'Rei Rav'idi says later on in our sugya. We'll have it tomorrow. The Chachamim would use the word imchahi for a different drasha that we're going to learn later, that we're going to learn at the end of our sugya, right before the next Mishnah. So they don't have to use it. But then the question is, Rabbi Huda Nami, how Rav Shisha B'Rei Rav'idi? Rabbi Huda would need it for the same limud as well. He has to learn Rav Shisha B'Rei Rav'idi's din that we're going to learn tomorrow. Everybody agrees with. So Rabbi Yehuda has to have some way of learning it too. No. So we can't say that that's how Rabbi Yehuda learns his concept in our Mishnah, that you can only be Chayiv Mishrom Aim and not Mishrom Eishas and not Mishrom Eishas. Okay, so it's almost night of time now, so we'll leave for tomorrow.
So where are we going?
So we stopped over here. El Amar Rav Acha.
No, I understand.
Yeah. So we'll continue tomorrow with how Rabbi Yehuda learns his din. So we'll see. We'll learn tomorrow how Rabbi Yehuda learns his din after all. Yeah, 9:30.